And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is leadership. Each of my guests is discussing leadership, whether it is in city government or in technology. My next guest is a professor at the Illinois Institute of Technology's Stewart School of Business. We'll discuss Apple's future after Steve Jobs. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. We have no takers for the four sandwiches or four salads from Urbane Cafe. The question was, what is today the 24th anniversary of? And for those of you that were wondering at home, today is the 24th anniversary of the 1987 stock market crash, where the stock market fell 508 points. That was 22.6% in one single day. And that was the anniversary of probably the second largest single event in the stock market history. And so that was the answer to today's question. However, if you still want the four sandwiches or four salads, be the third caller at 639-0008, 639-0008, and the four sandwiches or the four salads are yours. My next guest, Joel Goldhar, teaches business policy, operations and technology management, strategy, and competitive analysis. He served as the director of Manufacturing Studies Board at the National Research Council in Washington, D.C., and also on the National Science Foundation. Joel has published research in computer-integrated manufacturing and the impacts of technology on business strategy. He's currently a member of the R&D Council of the American Management Association, and he serves as on the editorial boards of several research publications. Joel served for a period of time as the dean of ITT Stewart from 1983 to 1998, joining us from the greater Chicagoland area. Hi, Joel. How are you today?
Hi, Bill. I'm fine. Thank you for inviting me on.
Well, thank you for being my guest. And I want to talk a little bit about Apple, because Apple and the world suffered a blow when Steve Jobs died suddenly. And Apple just took another tumble yesterday when it was announced its fiscal results for the past quarter. Earnings, interestingly enough, earnings per item was $7.05 a share. That was up considerably from $4.64. Net income rose to $6.62 billion. That's over a $2 billion increase over the year before. Revenue jumped 39%. However, the stock was slammed, and it fell 7% in after-hours trading. Analysts, however, were expecting a $7.39 per share increase, and they only got a 7.05%. The number of iPhones that sold was the disappointment. That's what caused the miss. And the bad financial performance just so happens to coincide the week after Steve Jobs dies. Is this a harbinger of things to come for Apple?
Well, you know, I don't get overly excited either about the stock analyst's view of what companies should be doing, or short-term either rises or falls in stock. You know, Apple's had a long run. It's still in the $400 range. It's still selling around 15 times earnings, which is very healthy. Suggests a lot of people think highly of it. This is a very uncertain time for all companies. But I wouldn't overly react to a few percentages on the stock. It is likely to be a great opportunity to buy, as it is an opportunity to take profits and sell. People who had faith in Apple and bought the stock when it was $5 might, now that they're 20-some years older and getting ready to retire, find this as a good time to take some profits while the capital gains tax is still fairly moderate. And so lots of things go on that affect the stock price that are kind of independent of the business. The business itself, you know, the one technology that I don't have is a crystal ball. And, you know, management and business is all about the future, not the past, unless you assume that the future is going to be exactly the same as the past. And, you know, was it Yogi Berra who said the future ain't what it used to be?
Right.
It's very difficult. What we do know is that lots of companies that were dominated by a brilliant, charismatic, and successful leader have done just fine as they've moved on. Walmart, after the death of Sam Walton, is still doing just fine. And I think Apple will survive the death of Steve Jobs in the same way. The You could ask the question the other way around. If the charismatic leadership were still there 4 or 5 years from now and something big comes up to change the environment the company is selling in, what would they have done? Would they have done any better than anybody else? I think there's been a lot written. You know, I'm a real outside observer. I don't live on the West Coast. I've never met Steve Jobs. I've never been an insider at Apple. But all of a sudden, we're learning a lot about Jobs. There's a wonderful commemorative issue of Time magazine that just came out with a picture of the young Steve and an early version of the Apple on the cover. And there's a great article written by Walter Isaacson in which he talks about, it says one comment, some leaders push innovations by being good at the big picture. Others do so by mastering details. Jobs did both relentlessly. And I think that's part of the secret of success in these companies. I think if I were, again, as an outsider, saying what made Apple work, it was, on the one hand, fanatically loyal customers, even in the darkest days, thinking back when the nicest thing many people said about Apple was it was a little overpriced for the power point or the power level, or it was somewhat underpowered for the price point. But for its loyal users, people who needed graphics capability and so on, who wanted plug and play, who wanted the reliability that came from being vertically integrated, they stayed with the company even when Steve wasn't running it, and I think it made it possible to see this long history of Apple's success. The thing that Jobs brought to whatever company he ran, and think about his work at Pixar, was a real focus on the customer and the next new thing, the next big thing. It wasn't just making the best, whatever that meant, personal computers. It was making the most interesting and exciting movies. It was making extreme portability for your music and for information and entertainment in general, whether it was carrying your 1,000 favorite songs around in something the size of a wristwatch, or being able to download podcasts from your academic courses so you didn't have to bother going to class, or wireless communications. You know, it's not a history of Apple as a computer company. It's a history of Apple as a company that, through Jobs' leadership, was focused on the customer and let the numbers come afterwards.
All right, that makes sense.
There aren't a lot of U.S. companies and a lot of U.S. CEOs, I think, that think that way these days.
My guest is Joel Goldhar. We're talking about Apple Computer after Steve Jobs. And in that answer, Joel, you did mention that many companies have survived the loss of a charismatic leader. You mentioned Walmart. Interestingly, Steve Jobs sat on the board of Walt Disney. And there's a company who is probably more closely aligned with Apple, where you have Walt Disney was the head of his own company. And when he died suddenly in 1967, the company went into a 10-year funk, where it just sort of moved sideways and really didn't progress, really didn't do anything spectacular until they got new leaderships from the outside. Do you think the same sort of thing may happen with Apple Computer, both in its product innovation as well as its financial performance?
Look, anything can happen to anybody. You do get the sense that, as we read the insider comments now, that Apple has built a very strong bench, that it's got a whole lot of people who not only ask what would Steve do now, but have been trained in how Steve would have thought about something. Should we attack television next and make it easier and more reliable and better for the, what would better for the consumer, better for the user really mean? The Apple brand is for, the promise of the Apple brand isn't for better computing, it's for products that give you a better life. Who knows? Maybe they'll decide that the next big thing for Apple to go after is a version of an electric automobile, with its skills. But it's the relentless execution of good strategy. Anybody can get a good idea. Making it happen is what's difficult. You know, it takes a company, it takes an organization structure, it takes a whole lot of people to make something happen.
I love that. The relentless execution of good strategy. My guest is Joel Goldhart. Joel, I want to continue on with Apple for just a moment, because Apple's always been known for its closed architecture. The concept.
Bill, can I just make one more comment about the issue of execution of strategy?
Sure.
You know, you think of a little 2x2 matrix. You've got strategy and execution, and strategies are either good or bad, and execution is either good or bad. There is no substitute for good strategy. If you have a bad strategy well executed, it's a fast track to bankruptcy. A really good strategy, even if it's only sort of well executed, will usually be profitable because, you know, businesses are not set in cement. Some managers' thinking may be set in cement, but the business as a whole is a learning organization. It can try something and change. Apple had a number of mistakes and a number of products that didn't work, but, you know, failure was tolerated. We tried something. It wasn't as good as we thought it was. We didn't have as good a sense of the customer as we thought we did. Move on.
I like that. Failure is tolerated, and that's an important lesson for any business that's out there. You have to build in both the tolerance for failure and, of course, build in the mechanisms for people to fail without taking the company down at the same time. My guest is Joel Goldhar, and we're talking about Apple. I did want to continue on with this closed architecture because you're both a technologist and a business person as well, Joel. And Apple's been known for its closed architecture. You know, the concept was less successful in computing because Windows and Intel came in with their open architecture, and for a long time, Windows and Intel dominated personal computers. We also saw the closed architecture, although it was renamed as the ecosystem, with the iPod, the iPhone, and now the iPad. Why did the closed architecture succeed for Apple in consumer products, where it failed for them in the computer market?
Well, it's not clear that it failed in the computer market.
4% of market share. At one point, it was down to 2%.
Yeah, you had those fantastically loyal customers. 4% of a huge market, if you're making money in it, is not bad. I mean, people get too excited about market size and revenue growth and not excited enough about profitability. You're better off to have fewer customers who are more loyal and willing to pay for what you give them than to try to be giving it away to the whole world just so you can claim market share. I think vertical integration gives you control over the quality of the component parts that you get, control over the quality of the relationship between the salesman in the store and the customer that comes in, control over how long somebody in a call center will keep talking to a customer. You know, everybody's very excited about supply chains and extended supply chains, but now we're seeing the kinds of problems you get into. Look at Boeing's difficulty with managing its supply chain. You know, the weak link in the supply chain is the independent third-party ownership of any of your suppliers. Their strategy may not match yours. By the time you deal with enough legal contracts, by the time you have enough inspectors and so on, making sure they're doing what you would have done, the way you would have done it, you might as well do it yourself.
That's an interesting perspective. We don't have time to pursue that right now, Joel, but I may have you back in the future to talk a little bit more about that. My guest is Joel Goldhar. We're talking about Apple Computer. And Joel, of all Steve Jobs' innovations, the products, his achievements, which stand out in your mind as the most important?
I'm an iPad user. You know, I'm getting old. My eyesight isn't so good. The ability to have a screen in front of me in which I can easily control the size of the font and so on is just wonderful. It's like a big smartphone that my stubby, clumsy, arthritic fingers can actually do something with. So, to me, it's the iPad. To my kids, it would have been the iPod, which freed them up from the boombox. They could have all the music they wanted just in their pocket with a little earbud. To other people, it's the smartphone, which just gave them a handheld computer. You go back a few years, or maybe a couple of decades, and it was the Mac. And it was the software of the Mac, and it was plug and play. I guess, to me, the other big thing would be the plug and play. I didn't have to worry about, did I have a printer driver and so on. You just plug it in, and it works. The non-Mac machines still today are struggling with that.
That they are. My guest has been Joel Goldhar, a professor at the Illinois Institute of Technology. Joel, if people like what you have to say and maybe they want to learn more about you, learn more about your teaching, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I would just Google these comments. There is a great book recently come out by Professor Richard Rommel at the Anderson School of Business at UCLA, who's looking at these issues of strategy as a whole and execution. I think the title of the book is called Good Strategy, Bad Strategy, The Difference in Why It Matters by Richard Rommel, R-U-M-E-L-T. I think he's been doing this for longer than I have. And if you wanted to read something, that's probably going to be the best current book out there. But everybody's got to pay. This is nothing new. All companies, if they last long enough, face maturity. In a mature world, products begin to look alike. You get a dominant design. The market gets saturated. People have what they need, and they're happy with it.
And we're going to have to leave it there. I'm sorry, Joel. We just run out of time. We'll have to have you back in the future. Thanks for being a guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.